Hi, this is Wilb's Peace and Freedom Hour. We're on every Wednesday afternoon from 5 to 6 o'clock. And we're going to, in a few minutes, be playing a tape of our show from last week because it was such an important show, not just about our Congress and people's impressions, but really about the whole mission and goals and what WILF is all about, WILF being the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And we had so many of our WILF sisters and brothers on that we just felt that that show deserved to be repeated so that maybe a few people who missed us last week will catch it this week. And we just want to let you know, heads up, that we are going to be having Pete McDowell on next week. He's with NC Warn, and that's our local or regional environmental nuclear watchdog.
Right.
Am I getting that right, Dick?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it was particularly apropos with so much in the news lately about Japan and more and more information coming out about how they were so ill-prepared, the company that ran their nuclear program. And that was particularly shocking because I think we always think of Japan as being so well-regulated and so advanced with their technology and things. And it sounds like they're not doing any better than us. And that brings us to us. An article in the News and Observer on this Monday, June 20th. Okay, headline, Nuclear Safety Rules Wane. Federal regulators have been working closely with the nuclear power industry to keep the nation's aging reactors operating within safety standards by repeatedly weakening those standards or simply failing to enforce them, an investigation by the Associated Press has found.
That's very much like what happened in Japan. When they changed the allowable amount of radiation by a factor of 20 when it applied to children. I mean, it was just astonishing that they would do that.
They just keep, time after time, this is in the NNO, the article, time after time, officials of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission have decided that the original regulations were too strict, arguing that safety margins could be eased without peril, according to records and interviews. The result? Rising fears that these accommodations by the NRC are significantly undermining safety and inching the reactors closer to an accident that could harm the public and jeopardize the future of nuclear power in the United States. Examples abound. When valves leaked, more leakage was allowed. When rampant cracking caused radioactive leaks from steam generator tubing, an easier test of the tubes was devised so that the plants could meet these weaker standards.
Pete's going to tell us about that next week.
Yes. Failed cables. I'm just going to tell a little bit more from this article because this was not really a surprise because Warren, NC Warren, has been keeping us apprised and knowledgeable about this stuff. But still, it's so heartening that it's now out in the regular press, and we will get the behind the scenes and even more next week. It's a very shocking tale. Both industry and government officials defend their actions, and it still insists that no chances were being taken. And that is very much like the Japan nuclear industry. So I won't read you any bit more of this disheartening, but the heartening thing to me is that it is out in the commercial media. So tune in next week to hear Pete McDowell fill us in on our local picture. Okay, Dick, take it away.
Okay, now, this is last week's show of people recapping their experiences at the WILF Triennial Congress. We're playing it back for you again, so you can for those of you who missed it in particular.
This is Wilps Wednesday afternoon radio show. We're here every Wednesday afternoon from 5 to 6 o'clock, and WILP stands for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And we are here today with many of our WILP sisters and brothers to let you know, give you a report on the national, triennial national Congress that we just had, that we've been talking about for some weeks now. So we thought it would be a nice thing to have people give some what struck them, what inspired them, just some real life from the heart reports from the Congress. I keep calling it a conference, but it's really called the Congress. And I am Lori Hoyt, and co-host with Dick Paddock, who just reminded me to say that. And just a quick overview of this Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Triennial Congress. WILP, as we affectionately call ourselves, began in 1915. We may have mentioned this once or twice, but it bears repeating. As a group of courageous women working for peace, went across the sea when there was danger of torpedo attacks to meet with women in Europe, in The Hague, in 1915. The First World War was going on, and these women wanted to stop this bloodshed. And so they've had delegations go to all the participants in the war, telling them other ways to have peace, to negotiate their differences, to mediate their differences. As we know, they were not successful in doing that, but they were so heartened by their work together and by the women who cared about their fathers, brothers, sons, not wanting to have this bloodshed, that they formed this group, which we now are. So this Triennial Congress, the theme of it was ending war. We keep working on that, and one of these days we're going to be successful. Ending war local to global. So we just had, what a huge turnout from women from all over the country, and a few, I know we had our international Secretary General Madeleine Rees come from Geneva. And just as an overview to let you know, we had three main speakers, lots of wonderful workshops. Three main speakers, Kathy Kelly, head of Voices for Creative Nonviolence, and we're going to have, in a short time, Jane Maskey, one of our sisters, talk about how much hearing Kathy Kelly, what it meant to her. And you may recognize Kathy Kelly. The Voices for Creative Nonviolence is relatively new. It grew from, which I'm more familiar with, Voices in the Wilderness. She, I remember her going over to Iraq just before the war. She has been in these war zones and continues to bring back reports of what's really happening in these places. On Friday evening, we had our beloved keynote speaker, the Reverend Dr. William J. Barber II, president of the North Carolina State Conference of the NAACP. He is a pastor, a teacher, a historian, an organizer, and most importantly, a visionary voice for justice that finds its roots in the Southern faith tradition of Martin Luther King Jr. We had a huge turnout for that. As always, he uplifted us, heartened us, but also gave us the call to action. And in fact, the call to action was that very night after his speech. He encouraged, and a lot of people from the Congress went to Raleigh to do a candlelight a protest as our legislators were in passing one of the most brutal budgets in our state's history. And I'm sure one of us, probably Miriam and maybe some others, will talk about some of what Reverend Barber's talk, how it heartened them and encouraged them. And then on Saturday, I had mentioned Madeline Reese. She was formerly the head of office for the UN High Commissioner for the Rights of Women in Bosnia. And as I said, is our current Secretary General of WILF International. And that is, just to be sure you all know, we are local, national, and international. And so somebody here, I'm sure, will kind of talk a little bit about that. If not, I will. So this was just a wonderful opportunity for us to learn from each other, get ideas from women who are in the trenches all over the country, fighting for social justice, fighting for peace, fighting, it just seems like a bad metaphor here, struggling for peace. Okay.
Working for peace.
Yes, we've got to be careful with these. You see, we're so inured to these militaristic metaphors. I mean, it comes too naturally.
Waging
peace sounds good. So we're going to start off, as I mentioned, with Jane Maskey, one of our sisters, and she was particularly struck by Kathy Kelly. Jane.
My name is Jane Maskey, and I'm a new member of WILF, but I was active in the civil rights movement at college in Washington, D.C. in 1963. I'd like to tell you a little bit about Kathy Kelly, a petite Irish-American woman who is a giant as an anti-war activist. Listening to her speak, I was struck by her incredible courage. I was also moved, saddened, and horrified by what she had to say about Afghanistan. Kathy Kelly has made 26 trips to Iraq and recently 4 trips to Afghanistan. This country is 85% rural. Many families have 15 children, and the life expectancy there is 42 years. 800 children die there a week from the effects of war, malnutrition, disease, and pollution. Kabul is the most polluted city in the world. It started out with 500,000 people and now has 5 million people living there. The sanitation situation is horrible, with particles of feces in the air, resulting in many people dying of respiratory ailments. The United States pays $2 billion a week for this war. Drones kill and maim great numbers of civilians. Kathy Kelly talks about individual children by name who have been seriously injured due to this war. She said, quote, "There are children entrapped in a war that goes on and on. We don't pause to feel the sorrow of war." One teenage boy she met lost his whole family due to the ravages of this war. He said to her, "What is the use of the life without the family?" Kathy Kelly said, "Nonviolence can change the world." She believes in responsible withdrawal, and so do I. I will conclude with a story she told. Many teenagers go into the hills to pick firewood and metal scraps to bring home to their families so they can provide some income for them. Kathy Kelly met one solitary, depressed 17-year-old boy sitting alone in a hospital. He had found some metal, and it turned out to be a bomb, which exploded, and he lost his eye. He said to her, "I have lost my eye forever. Isn't it time that we bring the troops home and stop this carnage?"
Wow. Thank you, Jane. Thank you for reminding us of how moved we all were by Kathy Kelly and how she does bring the sadness and the sorrow right into your hearts.
Yeah. And action.
And actually,
she also was going to be on the U.S. boat to Gaza.
The audacity of hope, and was urging people not just to listen to these horrible stories, but to get engaged. So I'm going to give a number we frequently give on this program.
This is Miriam Thompson speaking.
Hi, WILF member. 202-456 1414 or 202-456-1111, which is President Obama's number. And we urge after the program that people just flood his number. And the reason is to demand that the U.S. protect this boat to Gaza, delivering actually letters from children to the children in Gaza. Other boats, you know, have been bombed, invaded, whatever they do when they go on boats, but people killed trying to deliver humanitarian supplies. But this is just delivering hope to the children, and Kathy will be on that boat.
When is that boat?
It's supposed to go the end of June. They're not sure of the exact date, but I think supporting her and the people, other people who will be on the boat, by making sure that the President, Secretary of State protect the ship.
Yes, thank you. We also have with us Marguerite Coyle and Chris Carlson. Lucy Lewis and Ann Powers has just come in. John Ewer is here. We have quite a few Wilfers. Who would like to share some of Marguerite's going to come on next? Thank you, Marguerite.
Yes, what impressed me so very much were the wonderful, wonderful women who came to the Congress from as far away as California and many other states throughout the nation. Articulate, powerful, committed, compassionate women, and I was very proud to be in their number. And they and International WILF plan to go forward with certain program priorities from 2011 to 2015. And these are to challenge militarism, to invest in peace, and to strengthen the UN with the overall aim to redefining security. WILF feels, along with the UN, that women are particularly hurt during times of war. They're hurt not only physically, but they have lose power. They do not have a say in the peacemaking, nor did they have a say in the war making. So it is imperative that we change militarism and that we work on security for women. War can only be avoided by actions focused on the prevention of conflict, the regulation of the arms trade, and disarmament. We must invest in peace, WILF says. And they are particularly wanting to work with the UN Security Council and the Resolution 1325 on women, peace, and security. And they will continue monitoring and advocating for the full implementation of the Women, Peace, and Security agenda in the UN Security Council and by all member states, as well as focus on the work of the UN Human Rights System for further implementation. Not only that, but WILF wants to help strengthen the UN. The projects, offices, and UN representatives will routinely send updates to WILF sections when their governments make statements or state positions at the UN. WILF will advocate for Security Council implementation of the Women, Peace, and Security agenda. They will promote the improvement and reorganization of the UN system in order to fulfill the spirit of the UN Charter. It was especially inspiring to us to meet Madeleine Rees, our International Secretary General, and also who has close ties to the UN and who will continue to keep WILF values and concerns before the UN. We are quite pleased that we were able to meet her.
That was a good reminder that a lot of times we forget ourselves that we have NGO status at the UN. We get so caught up in our local struggles and issues. And this conference was a good reminder, of our UN connections and that we are an international group. Okay, next we're going to have Ann Powers, one of our sisters who is here. And Dan, glad you could come.
Well, I'm happy to follow up on Marguerite's praise for Madeleine Rees, the Secretary General of WILF, residing in Geneva, because the highlight of this Congress for me was her saying, WILF is the institutional memory for the world. It just took my breath away and really enhanced my love and appreciation for WILF and my being able to be part of it, because for more than 90 years, women and men of WILF have recorded what has happened in the world, continue to record the happenings in the world, and have a vision for the future. We have a memory that serves us in serving the future. And I think that's a powerful contribution that WILF makes to the world. Today, we have women across the world and men who are committed to that vision, to making that memory work in drastically, dramatically challenging times, reminding the world of where we've been, where we are, and where we need to go. So I'm proud to be a member of this international organization.
Thanks, Anne. And just to make sure people know, besides Dick Paddock, there are men of WILF, and John, we were wondering if you could come and just say a few words. You've been such an important part of WILF and such an important part of the peace struggle, because you're not just part of WILF, but for the peace action. And so if you want to just tell us a little bit about you being at the conference and something that may have struck you or something that you might want to say about it.
Thank you, Laurie. Yes, it was really a thrill for me to participate in this Congress with these wonderful, mostly women, some men too. I'd like to share a few highlights. One was the inspiration of Ellen Thomas coming from Western North Carolina. Ellen had spent 18 years in a daily vigil at the White House over several presidential administrations, advocating for the abolition of nuclear weapons. And she's a new friend from Western North Carolina, and look forward to a strengthening relationship with Ellen. I had the honor of picking up Rose from Milwaukee at the airport on Friday night, and hearing Rose, who is a tiny 85-year-old woman, a longtime, lifelong WILF member, talk with such enthusiasm about the Wisconsin Wave, the movement for democracy in Wisconsin. Very exciting to hear her enthusiasm. Also, friends of friends and new friends, Odile and Alan Haber from Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I went to school many years ago, and their very exciting proposal, which they call a movable peace, including a march from Detroit to Mackinac Island from 4th of July to Labor Day to join the traditional Michigan Labor Day walk across the Mackinac Bridge, inviting colleagues from Western Michigan and from the Upper Peninsula to join them and meet at Mackinac Island. So this is a very exciting development that I'm encouraging all my Michigan friends and family to support. And finally, I'll echo the words that Jane and Marguerite and Miriam shared about having a chance to get to know Kathy Kelly somewhat better. We had met at an Albany Peace Conference last July, but this was an opportunity to not only to listen to her amazing, amazing tales, but to have a chance and talk with her. And I shared with Miriam last week some of the exciting moments happen outside of programs, workshops, and plenaries. And one happened to be talking with our North Carolina Peace Action Executive Director Betsy Kreitz outside of the hall, and she asked me about a tune that I'd shared at the Carrboro Memorial Day event, and so I happened to have my harmonica and played the Sibelius Song of Peace, and Kathy Kelly walked out during that playing, and she followed up my sad harmonica with her own version of Sibelius' Song of Peace in Arabic, which she had learned in Baghdad.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
what a treasure that moment. Yeah.
But thank you so much for the opportunity to be here, and I'm very interested to hear the other stories from the Women of Wealth that have to share during the remainder of the hour.
Okay, John, thank you so much. And next we're going to have Chris. What are we having?
Lucy can sit. I was just going to say that one of the reasons Chris what Chris is going to share on the whole corporate personhood, we didn't mention, but the breadth of workshops. It's, remember, end war, local to global. So we're not only talking about our international role, but our role in the country and our state, and some of the wars are against the corporations that are dominating, as people know, our elections and seeking to disenfranchise, which is what we're seeing in North Carolina and throughout the country, trying to disenfranchise voters. So the issue of
broadening the definition of war.
Broadening the definition of war, that's right. War abroad, war in Gaza, war in Afghanistan.
The war is on by the corporations on the people and on the workers.
That's right.
That very definitely.
Chris is also one of our new WILF members, and a dear old friend. And so we're just so delighted that you're able to come this afternoon, Chris.
Well, thank you so much. The WILF Congress is the first one that I ever attended, and it was a real eye-opener. It was just so much more interesting than I thought it could ever be. And I was very, very impressed, as so many of these other people have already told you, so many of the stories. But there's just so much more. While I was at the WILF Congress, I was holed up in a silent auction room when Lucy Lewis quietly released me from pricing activities and directed me to the plenary, moving from democracy in crisis to democracy by the people. And that means corporate personhood and how we can get rid of it. I thought that the 2010, when the Supreme Court granted personhood to corporations, that's when it really all started. But actually, I learned at the conference that it started in 1886, and the real reason for it was that the railroads going across state lines weren't actually able to be controlled anymore by the states, and so this ballooned into, the corporations could do anything that they wanted to do. The 14th Amendment granted them personhood, so that was a very long time ago, just after the Civil War, and now there's an amendment, Move to Amend.org, which needs to be passed and is going to be a long and tiring struggle, I'm sure. But my rather lame analysis of corporate personhood is that this concept is at the root of most of all of our problems because corporations only care about making money. It affects our food supply, which is both unhealthy to our livestock and ourselves. It pollutes our water through fracking, hog lagoons. It affects our air quality, our energy, our environment, our economy. So
every aspect
it
of
seems,
our life.
Yeah, it seems that the corporations are just at the bottom of the whole thing. Move to amend.org. Mission is to end corporate personhood and make them accountable again. This has been done at a local level in a place in California, so there's always hope for the future, and mm-hmm. they give you lots and lots of information how to help out. And
this would basically amend the Constitution.
It would, right.
To reverse the Supreme Court decision in the last century.
Right. Yeah, that's all it is. 19th century. That's all they have to do.
Right. So. As you said, an arduous but worthwhile struggle.
Yeah. So I suppose that is the big thing I came away with, but there are just so many things that It's impossible just to say there's one thing. But I appreciated this Congress and all the people who,
Chris,
put this on. Oh, my gosh.
We were so glad that you came, and also thank you for all your hard work with Ann on the silent auction, which helped us defray some of our expenses as we continue on with our work, and that was just really wonderful. Do we need to do a station break now, and then we'll continue
that
on?
That would be a good time.
Okay. This is Wilps Wednesday afternoon hour-long radio show. We don't have a catchy name for it yet, but we're here every Wednesday afternoon from 5 to 6 o'clock bringing you the alternative news of the day. And we are very pleased to have an underwriter, Internationalist Books, 405 West Franklin Street. And this is a bookstore that has a lot of the books on culture and politics that you're not going to find in the big box stores. Plus, they will order you any book that you don't have. And mostly, it's also a community resource. You can find out what's happening in the progressive community there. They have movie nights when anybody's come from some particular political protest around the country, that the Internationalists host them, and you hear from the person what was going on. They have a craft night. They have all kinds of things, so we encourage you to. And what is their website, Dick?
Internationalistbooks.org.
.org. So we encourage you to go there. And we are being brought to you by another wonderful volunteer group, WCOM, LP, FM. We're very proud to be a part of the WCOM family.
Right. Chapel Hill and Carborough.
Chapel Hill and Carborough. Although I would reverse that and say Carborough and Chapel Hill. Okay. Next, we're going to have Lucy Lewis, who is one of our very staunchest members, comes from a Wilp family, three generations. We're so pleased you're able to come, Lucy. Thank you for being here.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be here, and particularly today with so many women and men from our community who are working for social justice and reflecting on the recent Women's International Week for Peace and Freedom Congress. One of the highlights for me, or one of the reasons I've always been proud to be a member of WILPF, is because it's not a single-issue organization, that it's been dedicated to addressing not just war and the issues of war and peace, but addressing the root causes of war, which means that we're looking at issues of economic and racial and social justice, and have an analysis, as Chris was just saying, that sees the underpinning for so much that's wrong in our community is the monopoly control of business and increasingly political interests that are driven by that, that control affects everything that we're doing and living through. So one of the highlights to me of the Congress was the opportunity to hear Reverend William Barber speak on last Friday evening, who is the prophetic and visionary head of our North Carolina NAACP and also a board member of the national NAACP. And in his talk, not only did he talk about the long history and relationship between WILPF and the NAACP, which I had known about, but he was able to really fully expand upon.
Yes.
And the historic relationship between the NAACP working for the rights of African Americans and people of color in this country and WILPF with its multi-issue analysis of the world, the world that we live in, but also bringing that up to our contemporary relationship of WILPF here in Orange and the Triangle community working with the NAACP. Part of his talk, of course, was talking about the tremendous cuts that we're facing here in North Carolina with the horrendous budget that's just recently vetoed by Governor Beverly Perdue because of what it would mean for people in the state, for working people, for low-income people, for people of color, for children, for the disabled, for the elderly, just the devastating cuts that it would create. And then following his talk, and his very comprehensive presentation about the challenges that we're facing and the need for people to really act in response to that, was the opportunity to go with several carloads of men and women from the Congress to the State House. First, we gathered in front of the General Assembly on the Great Seal of North Carolina, where we prayed and sang, lit our candles, and reflected on this terrible crisis that the people of the state are facing. And, of course, it's also a reflection of the crisis that we're facing nationally with an extreme right wing that's pushing the destruction of human services and the needs of humankind, of working people and poor people in this country. And then the opportunity to go in and see our General Assembly in action. We had thought that they would be voting on the budget on Friday evening. In fact, they talked about it Friday, and then they voted on it in the early hours of Saturday morning. But to stand in solidarity, not only with members from the Congress, but other members of the progressive community, to say that this is really the time to take a stand. And we hope that all of our listeners today will be thinking about ways that they too can become engaged in what's happening, that this is not a time to sit back and complain or deplore what's happening, that that's not enough, that it's really a time to act. So whether people are working with the NAACP or the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, whether they're working with their local labor organizations, which as we know are under attack, whether they're working with groups like Democracy Now!, which are fighting against the voter ID bill that's being required. There are lots of progressive groups out there, and I just really call on all of our listeners to see this as a time to be more engaged than ever, and we would certainly welcome them working with WILPF. We have a website, www.trianglewilpf.org, where there's information and people can get in touch with us. We'll be in Carbo July 4th. At the town hall with information and petitions, but whatever organization speaks to your heart, it's really a time to be involved, and that's what the Congress was all about for me.
I want to echo Lucy. It's Mary McGinn, and in terms of Reverend Barber, he just, many of you know that early this morning, once again, in the wee hours of the morning, the governor's veto was overridden because of the cooperation of five legislators who supported
so-called
Democratic legislators, but it doesn't matter. The party labels don't matter anymore, but they did override the governor's veto. However, there are many more issues that Reverend Barber and the important thing I think we've stressed is this giant of a man who brings military expansionism, war, economic injustice, racist violence, racial violence together in one piece. And as Lucy mentioned, his chronicling of the great relationship which continues today with our work with the local chapter and the state chapter, but the relationship with WILPF and NAACP, I think will only strengthen in the current wars that we have to fight. But people should know, just following up Lucy in action, that the governor is considering vetoing the legislation that would create what we're calling a poll tax, the voter ID, which is clearly intended to disenfranchise voters. There's also legislation that would reduce early voting, the time for early voting, if not get rid of it altogether. And then, of course, they're trying to redistrict so that the Tea Party maintains control. So there will be a lot more action. Reverend Barber has already opened up a whole chapter of civil disobedience. He's been working closely with faith and labor groups around these issues. Also, the effort to deny Planned Parenthood funding for health care, the crisis in health care and education that's in this budget, plus legislation that would really end choice right here, talk about the violence against women. That's exactly what this legislation is all about, and why Barber came to WILPF, because of the importance he feels of women and their brothers, of course, and the leadership of the movement, bringing historic memory into the current conversation. So,
yeah.
So we have work to do.
Well, and this has been talking about what's inspired us with the Congress, but what we're really moving into is then what do we do? We got a lot of information about understanding better how corporations acquired some of their power and the chicanery and trickery with getting something snuck in 1886 into another bill, the Santa Clara railroad bill that, and they've built on that and enhanced in this most recent thing with the United
Citizens United.
Citizens United just clarified it even further, and so we're moving into like the, you know, and I think Lucy very clearly said, you know, to all of you listeners, I know so many of us are so upset about what's happening, but let's not just stay upset. Let's get moving. Let's get. Wisconsin was an inspiration. You know, the Arab Spring is an inspiration. When people get out there, and really are willing to put themselves on the line for justice for what they believe in, we do have a fighting chance. We do have hope that we can overturn or change some of this trajectory that that the Republicans and others who join them seem to be bent on, a trajectory right back into the 19th century, right back into the time of Dickens.
There's also an election next year. So what, yes, many people are talking about is, and what we'll probably be doing on, most likely be doing on the 4th, is we will have voter registration
forms. Yes, I'm glad
you
came back to
the 4th. We will
have
petitions, and maybe others can talk about petitions. We will have action steps that people can start taking now. There was a Tea Party event in 1776. Well, we're now talking about another Tea Party event by getting rid of the Tea Party control with the help of corporations and the art popes that are now dominating not only this legislature but across the country. So I urge again people to come out on the 4th, join us, look at the website for action steps that we'll be taking now. I do want to tell you people, I just want to come back to some of the workshops because in addition to Madeline Rees and Kathy Kelly and William Barber, people have mentioned the workshops which will inspire actions in the next year and couple of months, especially around the attack on workers, corporate personhood, the whole international struggle around Israel-Palestine, which was one of our most powerful workshops, and the plenaries, of course. So lots of action came out of the Congress, lots
of
things.
Don't forget the anti-racism workshops.
Please talk about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two of them.
I only helped to do one of them, so I don't know anything about the other one, but the idea behind the anti-racism workshops that we presented was to get people who are not actually people of color to get a feeling for how you go about solving the problem, which is white privilege, and that white people basically have the advantage of white privilege in their lives, and they have to do two things. They have to recognize it, and they have to fight it themselves, because that's the only way that it's going to get done. We can't wait on black people to do it for us. We've got to do it ourselves. And that's the whole goal of this operation. And there are two approaches. One is the direct education approach that we use in the anti-racism work in the Age of Barack Obama workshop that I helped present. And then there's the Building the Beloved Community that is a long-term project that has been guided by Sean Mulder in Wilf. And so that's the two approaches, fellowship and direct confrontation, effectively, that we can use to try and combat the white privilege, systemic racism. Okay, this is Building the Beloved Community. Systemic racism, power, and propaganda, systemic abuse of power and the violation of basic universal human rights, economic exploitation, military police and civilian violence, criminalization and imprisonment, production and distribution of weapons and addictive substances, control of information and educational resources, and internalized racism to ensure the cooperation of the oppressed and other members of society. One of the things that's very important is the two-pronged situation where education is not provided in a meaningful way, and so particularly to men of color, boys of color, as they grow up. So then they don't have any any place to go except to be incarcerated. So that's one of the movements that we're working on, called Education, Not Incarceration. The idea being to stop the mass incarceration movement that has swept so many men of color of all ages up in and being warehoused in horrible conditions that just breed more criminalization. Mm-hmm. And so that's some of the different things we have to work on. I wanted to mention one other thing, following up on what Ann was talking about with institutional memory, and it was a little anecdote that Madeline Reese mentioned. She said that one day she walked into her office in Geneva while she was Secretary General, and she got a phone call. As she walked in, she picked up the phone, and at the other end of the line was somebody who she actually knew, recognized, but the woman said, "Is this Wilf?" And Madeline Reese said, "Yes, it is." And the woman said, "I'm on the Marvy Marmara, and we're being attacked, and I didn't know who else to call."
Oh, my.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
That just gave me a shiver.
Well.
Yeah.
So that's our. This was the attack of the flotilla that was headed for Gaza, attacked by the Israelis in the wee small hours of the morning, like 5 o'clock or something, on the high seas
in international waters.
International waters,
delivering humanitarian supplies.
Right.
Nine killed.
Yeah.
Right.
I wanted to, before we go, what Wilf does best and the multi-issue focus from global to local, but I did want to remind people about Kathy Kelly's plea, who will be on the boat to Gaza, to call the president to protect the boat.
Could you give us that number again?
202-456-1111 or 202-456-1414. It is.
That's a number we should all have. We should also know by our phone all the time.
We should also know, by the way, that the U.S. government continues to give the Israeli occupation $3.5 billion every year. So talking about, which John can come in later, and how one of the most important things we're going to be talking about on the 4th is how not only to end corporate personhood, but how they profit from the kind of military mm-hmm. contracts yeah. and redirecting military aid to social justice issues at home. One of the things that I think won so much attention from many of our sisters and brothers who came to the Congress was, among many wonderful workshops, was the labor workshop, and how we brought our wonderful friends from the Moncur struggle, Mel and Mary Monford, who came and held forth, and we talked about all the various campaigns that we've been running. Lucy had written a wonderful article in the Peace and Justice, Peace and Freedom newsletter on much of our work in the local community. But the issue of how we're not only violating UN International Declaration of Human Rights, but one of those important rights, of course, is economic justice. And the International Labor Organization that sets out the standards by which workers should feel, should have security in their jobs, are being violated by the U.S. You know that North Carolina does not have collective bargaining for its public employees. They have now, by the way, just denied the North Carolina Association of Educators dues checkoff. Yeah. Why? Because they stood there in front of the Capitol with Reverend Barber and other NAA and Wilf sisters and brothers challenging the budget and what it was going to do to children and to their families and to the public schools. So to punish them, they took away one of the most important rights of union members, which is dues checkoff, which keeps them strong, which keeps them a collective strength. They have now denied them. State legislature passed legislation. I don't know how, but they took away. There will be a constitutional challenge to this, took away their dues privilege. Just as Wisconsin, Supreme Court just supported, it was a tight 4-3 vote, but just supported Governor Walker in his effort to deny workers. So there's attack on workers. We're fighting wars all over, local and global.
And a struggle that we've continued to work on is to get rid of Jim Crow law.
Jim Crow law, that's the collective bargaining, 95-98, which, by the way, North Carolina has been sanctioned by the International Labor Organization for denying its public workers the right to collective bargaining. But it's all about a state that's used racism to divide workers, to deny economic justice, and to fracture any kind of, you know, important workers' movement. I should say, Chris, sitting here, especially a longtime public worker in Chapel Hill, has been really supporting the struggles we continue to fight locally that we brought to the attention of our sisters and brothers at the Congress, which are the housekeepers that, you know, Lucy can talk about that as a longer history, once again are facing sexual discrimination, sexual abuse, talk about sex trafficking. There's stuff going right on right now on the UNC campus against women workers that WILF is joining in protesting to the chancellor. So these struggles on behalf of our public workers, municipal public workers, our sanitation workers, which are part of the Chapel Hill public workers, and the housekeepers, we have joined now the struggle to make their lives more dignified and to get rid of those who really are abusing the workers. I want to say one last thing. With whistleblower, we may have an invitation from the varsity to show the whistleblower to the larger audience. It was a major film that we showed about sex trafficking based on the story of Madeline Rees and this extraordinary Nebraska cop that exposed sex trafficking among military contractors, U.S. military contractors,
and
UN personnel.
And today, on the WUNC, Kathy Boak, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, the actual whistleblower, she was featured on the radio this afternoon. I think it was the 2 o'clock show. I'm not quite sure. I was in the car, but I thought, oh, my gosh. And so they were doing a live broadcast with her telling her story.
And, of course, that was followed up at the Congress by a discussion not only by Madeline Rees talking about international human trafficking and sex trafficking, but by Donna Bickford, who's the director of the Carolina Women's Center, mm-hmm. talking about sex and human trafficking in this country. She talked about the fact that in North Carolina we're a major conduit for human trafficking because of the numerous army and military bases, because of the fact that we've got the superhighway conduits, and because of the issues that we've talked about already, that mm-hmm. North Carolina is an economically deprived state historically, mm-hmm. and a state where people of color have been discriminated unjustly mm-hmm. for so many years. And I think that's one of the things that the Congress did. I mean, we've been talking as we go back and forth about ending war local to global, that if we're concerned about peace and the international situation, we have to see its implications here at home. If we're concerned about what's happening here at home, we have to understand internationally what's going on. Just looking at the military budget alone, as Kathy Kelly said in her talk, mm-hmm. we're spending $1 million per day per soldier in Afghanistan. If we're talking about a deficit in this country, pardon?
Per year per soldier, $1 million.
Per day. $1 million per day, which is why we're spending $2 billion
per month,
every few months. You know, it's horrendous. It's hard to believe, right? How could that be?
But a lot of it is not spent on the soldiers. A lot of it goes to these war contracts, and that's where the money is. The military contracts for all the hardware, and that's where the money's being made.
So the United States has found money to be in Iraq. Mm-hmm. We found money to be in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. We found money to be in Pakistan, and now we're finding money to be in Libya. But at the same time, we're destroying the social safety net in this country.
Yes.
We're destroying the opportunities for people to get jobs and have a decent living and be able to take care of their families. So that's why we need to have a multi-issue systemic analysis.
That's right.
And we're destroying entire countries. Can you imagine if we took the $2 billion a week we're spending in Afghanistan and actually gave it to the people? How long would it take before they no longer had any problems?
Right. I mean, it's one of the most impoverished countries in the world.
Right. And you know, so suppose there's 2 million people. That's $1,000 a week for each person in the country.
Bread instead of bullets.
Exactly.
And at the same time, we're turning this country into a third world country. We're making education more difficult to get into, more expensive. where food is going up. I'm sure most of you have noticed, you go into the supermarket, it was already expensive. Food has gotten more expensive. They're just sort of tightening the noose around so many people who have been on the edge, and now they're going to be falling off the edge. And I think of all the people who've been foreclosed, unjustly. Mm-hmm. And the criminals who made this all happen are making more money than ever. And that is what just enrages, and I hope enough people get enraged that we have a lot more people joining us out in protests, out in phone calls to the president, out in wherever we need to go to try to make some the kind of change that we want to happen. And Anne is back with us.
I just want to put in one small voice for an overarching international problem, and that is the environment that we deal with. I wish I had the NNO with me, but I refer listeners to the first page of the NNO.
Today.
Yeah. Where, again, a small group of legislators. Oh, we have a copy. A small group of legislators.
Maybe it's on the triangle.
Anyway, triangle page.
Okay.
Slipped in an amendment to an environment bill that
is.
Wants to weaken.
Guts, air.
Here it is.
Air quality. Yeah.
It's trying to weaken the legislation.
For clean air.
For clean air.
Yes.
That it seems that in South Carolina and neighboring states, they follow the federal regulations for air quality, the emissions of corporations. And we have established in North Carolina, to the credit of past legislatures, more strict regulations.
Than the federal.
Than what's going on around us in other states. And this little amendment wants to go back to those minimum standards because companies like Duke and others object to our, because it doesn't bring in the business that we are supposed to have here. And again, it's corporations against the people, but it's against the air quality of the world. We're dealing with an international problem, and we are shoddily in this state addressing that.
Yeah.
So that's another issue that we have in WILF, we have to keep our eyes on.
I want to give a plug. I'm glad Ann mentioned it because one of our most important allies is NC Warn and Repowering North Carolina that has been struggling to create an environment that's hospitable to human life. And I think Chris we saw, Chris, you might want to mention Gasland, which we're going to be showing for WILF about fracking in the state. They're now trying to do fracking to release, you know, supplies of gas and contaminating our water. But it's all about corporate power and the control of this legislature.
Well, you know, that whole thing where they're trying to, we did such a good job of trying to get the water better, cleaner, the air cleaner. And again, this trajectory back to the 19th century and this whole thing with Dickens, because I read him so much, comes to mind. Remember when London was it was so thick, the dirt in the air, that you couldn't see a few feet ahead of you. Pittsburgh was like that, you know, and there's been, we've taken for granted now. We've been on a very slow but slight improvement, and we've gotten cleaner air, and we now kind of take that for granted, and it is being taken away from us. And we look at the rise of asthma rates with kids. You know, it's just, I'm so glad you brought up the environment, because that is, you're right, that's underpinning everything, because no matter what else happens,
exactly,
if you can't breathe the air and you can't drink the water, we're sunk. Yeah.
They're also, by the way, trying to immobilize the Environmental Protection Agency from monitoring any kind of regulations.
That's right.
Because there's always a pattern. Disenfranchise voters so they won't be able to speak out. Disenfranchise the agencies that are trying to monitor our quality of life by taking away their workers and their capacity. I mean, there was a story, previous story, about wells, about people who go around and help check the well water. especially with fracking, and they've now almost demolished the agency and the workers that have been doing such an incredible, beautiful stories of workers
so
who put their hearts into their work.
This movie, Gasland, and Chris has it. Is this what we're saying here? Where what?
We had seen it.
Yeah, okay.
Well, they're going back to fracking in Pennsylvania.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, this is something that's kind of a new thing. It was more fracking out west, and now there's two counties that are being targeted here in North Carolina, Lee and Chatham. And Chatham is our neighbor.
That's going to end our show for today. This is WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your 100-watt neighborhood local all-volunteer radio station.